Another day, another two Dunked On Basketball Podcast season previews. We just did the Celtics with Kevin O'Connor, and now it is time for the New Orleans Pelicans with Mason Ginsburg. What's up, man?
Not too much. How are you?
I am doing great. You are a fellow Tulane alum. You went there for undergrad, right? Or did you go there for business school?
Just undergrad.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you went to Texas for business school, right?
Yep.
Yeah, when did you graduate?
2010 is when I finished Tulane.
Yeah, so are you like a New Orleans native? How did you become involved covering the Pelicans?
Yeah, New Orleans native, lived there for 25 years before I jumped over to Austin for grad school. But I started writing just right out of undergrad just for fun, and things kind of snowballed, and it's been a really, really fun hobby, and you know, I just enjoy it.
So can you give our listeners a good New Orleans restaurant recommendation, since they, I'm sure everyone will go to New Orleans at one point or another as a tourist?
Oh, man. There's so many to choose from, and it's funny because I get that question.
I don't. Yeah, just watch it, though, because with our massive, massive listenership, any sort of off-the-beaten-path aspect to any restaurant you recommend will immediately be lost due to the crush of people that this recommendation is going to create.
Yeah, it's funny because people always ask me for these recommendations, and growing up, until I actually kind of moved towards uptown, my mom was a great cook, and I did not really go out to eat that much. Obviously, once I moved out to New Orleans for college, and then afterwards working for a few years between undergrad and grad school, I got to experience a decent amount of the restaurant options, and you really can't go wrong. I mean, Koshon Butcher is one of everyone's favorites. I love, and Joel Myers, the voice of the Pelicans, would also agree that Parkway Tavern Po' Boys are top notch, and that was the one place I would absolutely recommend hitting if you're going to be in New Orleans for a short period of time. Get yourself a Parkway Po' Boy, either roast beef or shrimp.
Yeah, I need to go there actually, because everyone that I'm with always wants to go to Mother's, and I've actually never
tourist trap. That good. Absolute tourist trap.
Yeah, Koshon Butcher is unbelievable though. That's either just like the sandwich shop or like the restaurant. Yep. Both of them are amazing.
Definitely.
All right, well, because this is a basketball podcast, maybe we should talk a little bit about basketball. I usually like to start with the question here, and it hasn't been applicable for a lot of teams, but I think it is for this one, of just how good this team was last year.
Yeah, it's a great question because the Pelicans who started this season is not the Pelicans who ended it. Obviously, the Pelicans team that ended this last season is pretty much the team you're getting back. We all, the common theme has been the continuity for the Pelicans and bringing the same squad back. But to start last year, the bench was thin, and that's putting it lightly. You had Austin Rivers, Jimmy Prudette, and John Salmons getting a bunch of minutes off the bench for the backcourt, and that's brutal. And so, credit to Del Demps for kind of making some midseason moves and bringing in some real talent to help fill out the bench. Dante Cunningham at the minimum was a great move, and they re-upped him for 3 years, and I think it was $10 million and he's been great off the bench. And then the Quincy Pondexter deal was pretty solid. Got pretty much dumped Austin Rivers and I think it was Russ Smith they moved to, and ended up getting Pondexter back, who's been great. His 3-point shot was revitalized in New Orleans. And even Norris Cole, people have a lot of things to say about Norris, and a lot of them sometimes are not too positive. But when you look at what the Pelicans had and what the Pelicans, and his additions to that team was, it really helped their bench. So at the end of the season, they won, I think it was 45 games, and they're really better than a 45-win team at that point. Obviously, the Jrue Holiday injury and him, his limited minutes was unfortunate. But this team was probably upper 40 win caliber at the end of the season. Whereas the first half of the season they were pretty much a 500 team. And you got to credit the growth of Anthony Davis obviously played a role in that as well.
Yeah, I think actually that last year and the year before too are very instructive in what potentially might be a negative way, at least, and we'll get to this, but for just what a difference it can make when you have guys who just are not good enough NBA rotation players taking up spots 5 through 8 or 9 or 6 through 8 or 9 during the regular season. And then what happens when you just replace those guys with mere competence? I mean, Pondexter, I felt like Pondexter saved them last year, especially once Evans had to go to playing the one because Holiday was out. They really didn't have much on the wing next to him. And even Cunningham, who I don't really like at the three that much. I thought he took too many long twos. He doesn't really do anything other than that offensively, but at least was a competent defensive player. And, you know, you couldn't just totally leave him wide open. You know, just having guys like that, and Cole too, as someone who I would think of as kind of a backup point guard and maybe even a lower end backup point guard, but still someone who can play some good defense. He was good on Steph Curry in the playoffs. And so just having those guys who just weren't completely terrible was fantastic. But I worry now for this year, with all the injuries they're going to have, that they're kind of right back in that same position that they were to start last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's been unfortunate, and it's just been a recurring theme. I feel like watching this before the Hornets before and now Pelicans, the one healthy year that the team's had in the last 10 is the 07-08 year when they had Chris Paul, Peja, David West, and Tyson Chandler in that team that was up 3-2 in the conference semifinals against the Spurs that couldn't – you know, the Spurs veteran prowess pushed them to win those last two games. But that was the one uniquely healthy season this team has had, and it's just it's too bad. I don't know enough from a medical perspective to even start to guess if it's fluky or if it's something to do with the training staff. So I'm not here to question that. But it would certainly be nice to get some health. But I mean, as long as AD stays healthy, this team can withstand a lot of injuries, at least keep themselves in position to make the playoffs.
Well, don't worry, because I am here to question that. and again, you know, like I said, for the Lakers, you don't know. It could just be bad luck, but especially the fact that have they ever overhauled their training staff in the last 10 years, or has it been kind of the same thing for? Do you remember? I mean, it's not something we pay attention to.
If they overhauled it, it hasn't been big news. I haven't heard any.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not something that people focused on, you know, in coverage up until like the last 2-3 years or so.
And I feel like if that had happened with all Pelicans injuries, I feel like it would have been big news. So,
yeah. All right. So, but I mean, let's just run down the list of injuries that this team has now. I'm just looking at like their Roto-World depth charts, and they have like a little S for sidelined next to each of the players. So, Tyreke Evans. Getting his knee checked out due to soreness, he's had a history of knee problems. Yep. Drew Holiday, everyone knows about him. He's going to be on the minutes limit due to the stress reaction that he keep having in his lower leg. Norris Cole, high left ankle sprain, out indefinitely. You know, that seems could miss up to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Eric Gordon, back spasms, will not play on Saturday against the Kings. Not a serious injury, but again, back spasms is something that, you know, is a muscle injury that there you don't just get back spasms. There's usually an underlying cause for that. Quincy Pondexter, no idea what his timetable is.
We can talk about that too.
yeah. You know, played all of last year, mm-hmm. or not all last year, but down the stretch basically with a knee injury that no one really seemed to know about. Luke Babbitt, strained left hamstring, no timetable for his return. Omer Asik, calf strain, and has been struggling with, you know, lower back issues over the summer. Alexis Ajinsa, 4 to 6 weeks for a hamstring, which is, you know, that's a pretty severe hamstring strain. The thing that sticks out to me about all this is a lot of these are just muscle injuries. You know, the sprained ankle with Norris Cole, I think that's just something that happens. You know, you can prevent that a little bit with strengthening and proprioception, but sometimes you're just going to come down on somebody's ankle wrong. I didn't see exactly what happened to him, but when you just have a ton of muscle injuries, hamstring injuries, calves, that is indicative to me of the type of injuries that are preventable. And when you just have things like that over and over and over again, or an overuse injury like the Holiday stress reaction, you know, that like I said on the Lakers podcast, there's a lot of smoke there. We don't know, but you have to wonder if they've just been unhealthy for so long, whether they need to maybe go in a new direction with some of the sports science stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and especially with all the, you know, I had a chance, courtesy of, you know, the reduced grad school prices, to go to the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference each of the past 2 years, and, you know, wearable tech was a big thing, and I think it's.
Are they doing any of that at all that you know of?
Not that I know of, and it seems like it should be at this point a foregone conclusion. I know there's been questions about, you know, intrusion of privacy for the players, and there's some pushback. But if you're a team like New Orleans, who's had, as you said, all of these injuries, and hypothetically, I mean, preventable injuries, and it's something you have to consider. And it's obviously it's been frustrating. I would assume that these players have put their health before any sort of possible concerns. And a lot of these guys are signed long term, so it's not like they're playing for their next contract, so to speak. But I don't know. It's tough and it's frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And maybe also one of the issues as well has been some of the turmoil in ownership. You'd hear rumblings out of there that at least during last year when there's this issue with Mr. Benson, now his court case has been resolved. He is going to be the owner of these. There's a hearing as to his competence, which got more ink with regard to the Saints. But basically, as I recall, it was his new wife. He decided he was going to be leaving all of his stuff to her. His adopted children pushed back on that and said, no, he's not competent. You know, it should still be us because they were supposed to be the heirs. And then it ended up that he was found still competent. His wife is going to get the team if he passes away. And now there's a little more stability. But maybe that's why some of these larger issues that take an investiture of resources haven't been addressed.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know how hands-on Tom Benson actually is with the Pelicans. Obviously, the Saints it's his baby, but I think he leaves a lot of the Pelicans' operations to Mickey Loomis and Demps and those guys. So I would hope it wouldn't play as much of a role in kind of the management of the team.
I'm thinking more from just a kind of, hey, we need some more money to do this. Yeah. Give it to us. And it's like, well, we don't really know what the situation is going to be. We don't even know who to ask, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. And I think it's definitely a question. Like you said, it's resolved at this point, hopefully. But another thing you got to think about, especially with all these injuries popping up over the last couple weeks to a month, is, switching from this Monty Williams slow paced offensive system to Alvin Gentry's, I'm sure he's been getting these guys and these Pelicans players have been conditioning themselves all offseason. So it's not like they all came in the camp out of shape. I've heard a lot of things, especially from Ryan Anderson and all the injuries he had last year, coming in the best shape of his life. But, you got to wonder a little bit if this new up-tempo offensive system they're playing in, more fast-paced, a lot more movement, that could play a role, too, in all these recent injuries that have flared up.
Yeah, that is something to watch as well. I mean, with Tony Parker and when Dan McCartney was on for the Spurs preview, he talked about this where, in that Spurs system, they didn't realize until they got the tracking data how much guys like Tony Parker were having to work on offense. So, yeah, that is something else to consider as well. But enough about the health stuff. Gentry, I think, was the biggest addition over the summer. They also got Darren Erman, who's a really respected defensive assistant. What changes do you expect to see now that they have these new coaches in place?
Well, the two big things that I've heard, one on each end of the ball, is kind of the change in offensive philosophy to take the first good shot. And instead of just, the best shot you can find, because a lot of times, and we saw it, over the past couple of seasons with Monty Williams, they would end up looking too long for a shot. And you usually have not a lot of shot clock violations, but just a lot of forced looks, at the end of the shot clock, or Tyreke Evans barreling into the paint, which he does pretty well. But if you're doing it with, 2 or 3 seconds left on the shot clock, and it's pretty easy to just collapse your defense and stop that sort of thing. So,
yeah, I think the system can really help him if they get in transition more, because he gets to the rim a lot, but he's not a great finisher. And if you attack in transition, there's going to be less help there, and he can, probably increase his finishing rate at the rim a lot. That's a good point there.
Definitely. And I think one of the columns I read last year that I'm proudest of it took a lot of research, but I just kind of dug into every single over the first 2 or 3 months of the season, he was finishing at an even lower clip than he usually does. And I just kind of went through the film and looked at everything. And it really seemed like the biggest driver, it wasn't a lack of respect from the refs. That contributed a little bit, but not a ton. It was more, more of him trying to be an acrobat and not drawing contact. So if he took the James Harden approach and actually sought out contact instead of just trying to do all these crazy reverse layups or other acrobatic finishes, you probably see him scoring at a higher efficiency. But I definitely agree that the Gentry system has the potential to really help Tyreke. But the other thing on the defensive end, and I think you've heard a lot of Pelicans players talking about it over the last week or two, is simplifying the defense. And so there are so many different play calls under the Monty Williams regime, and players weren't being held accountable for the defensive sets. And, I thought you had this guy. No, I thought you had him, that sort of thing. And, you know, under apparently on Urban's defensive system, three play calls. And so I think just the simplification and ability for to have account for these players to have accountability for where they're supposed to be on defense and when they're supposed to be there should help this squad as well.
Did they say what those three play calls are?
Did not.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect it, but since you mentioned it, yeah, that's and I think is the idea that they're going to be trying to ice more pick and rolls, keep the bigs back a little bit more rather than having those guys up near the level of the pick and roll, talking about the big defenders.
Yeah, I mean, and that's that would make sense. And I think that, I mean, obviously the biggest problem with the Pelicans last year, and it kind of I think particularly with Omer, I think people started giving him a bad rap when, you know, maybe some of it was deserved. His offense was probably worse than it usually even usually was last year. But it's hard for these defensive bigs to really post a strong defensive rating when the perimeter defense is just a revolving door. And I mean, obviously injuries play a little part in that. Not having Jrue Holiday healthy, who's arguably the Pelicans' best perimeter defender, caused problems. But you know, these defenders like Eric Gordon has not been the defender he was when he was younger. You know, ever since all these knee injuries, and you know, like adding Quincy and Dante helped, but just not a ton of perimeter defense, and it really really hurt their defense overall, and especially the Pelicans' bigs had to pay for it.
Yeah. They, I believe, were in the 20s in defense last year, but then also were a top 10 offense and were, I think, the last 2 years. In fact, even 2 years ago when they're even more beset by injuries than last year. So maybe Monty gets a little bit of a bad rap for the offense, but I think with the defensive talent on this team, even when they were running with Holiday, Ashik, and with Anthony Davis out there, which should just be a monster defensive lineup with those three guys in there, they still really weren't able to defend that effectively.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an issue, and I think, I mean, you can say what you want about Dante at the three, and there's a lot of people who question that, and one of my big pushing points in the offseason was that I felt like Gentry was going to have him try to take that step back and turn those long twos into threes, which...
Yeah, he shot one of those in the preseason game against Chicago that I saw that I think you were at.
Yeah, and the lineup of Tyreek Gordon, Cunningham, AD, and Omer was plus 11.4 in points per 100 possessions, and that was the second most used lineup for the Pelicans last season. So it's worked. I mean, they were allowing 97 points per 100 possessions, so pretty solid defensively. And I mean, so there were things that did work. Obviously, you got to play so many different lineups when guys go down, but certain lineups did work defensively, and I think that's something that they can kind of look at and push more next season.
Yeah, I think so. And if they can get, I mean, I just love what they did from a coaching hire standpoint. I would have maybe liked to try them get a little bit more creativity in their signings this year, but you know that's in the past now. It looks like Ashik is probably not. Is what's the latest on him? Is he going to be ready to start the season? They said 3 weeks, and that was basically like 3 weeks before the start of the season.
I don't think they're going to make it a huge priority to bring him back for opening night. I think he'll be back after like two or three games, because two of their first three games are against the Golden State Warriors, and we kind of saw the limited role Omer had against them in the playoffs. Yeah. So I don't, if he's like kind of almost ready but not completely ready, granted that Jintz is out too, so not having Kendrick Perkins as your only true center is frightening, but I don't there's not really a reason to rush him back against the team.
Do you think they'll start him, or they just start AD and Anderson, or AD and Cunningham?
I think they'll start God, it hurts to say this, but I think they're going to start Perkins. I mean, he'll play like no more than 10 minutes. He may play like 4 minutes to start both halves, and that's it.
Coaches are so weird, man. Like, why did they do that? Why? It's just you have to start the game in some kind of traditional alignment, even when you know it's not the best way to do it. I mean, and so I don't know. I mean, maybe the idea is we got to steal some minutes for Perkins. We know that they're playing the Warriors. Bogut is going to be out there. That's really the only guy that Perkins can guard, right? Although I mean, all the only skill he brings is post defense, yeah. And you know, they don't need that against Warriors. So I don't know. If Perkins is playing big minutes for this team, yeah, that's it's going to be it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I 10 times out of 10, I'd rather have Alonzo G eating minutes at the three and moving Dante to the four and playing Anderson and Davis more 4 or 5 than having Perkins out there. But I'd rather them go small than if it's a guy with as limited of a game as G, than to have Perkins out there. But we'll see what Gentry decides to do.
All right. So from a national kind of perspective, who is someone who, might be a little bit better than people think on this team?
I think Tyreek's your guy. I mean, I think that he kind of public perception on him is that he can't shoot that well. He just kind of he barrels into the paint and he can create, but he's not that efficient in doing so. And I really think, I mean, he was, apart from Anthony Davis, he was the Pelicans' most consistent player last season. And I think, we already talked about it briefly. I think he's really going to flourish under this up-tempo system with Gentry. And hopefully he's got the athleticism to be good defensively. And he's also one of those guys who's never really had great coaching. If you look at where he was with the Kings and then, again, not to discredit Monty Williams too much, but he hasn't had that great, mentorship, I feel like. And I think with proper coaching under Erman and Gentry, maybe you see Tyree take a step up on the defensive side too, because really with the wingspan and athleticism that he brings, there's no reason he can't be at least, slightly above average of a defender. So I think you're going to see Tyreek really be solid for the Pelicans next season.
Yeah, and he's really strong too, which is another thing that can be helpful. What about someone who might be a little overrated on this team?
It's tough to pick that because I feel like everyone's either properly rated and the fact that they're most of these guys are in their basketball athletic primes. It's hard to see someone maybe taking a step back or being too overrated. Eric Gordon had a great year shooting the three last year, but I mean the fact of the matter was So his player efficiency rating was 12.7 last year. And, I mean, obviously that doesn't
– Yeah, and his on-off numbers were not that great either.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't paint the whole picture, obviously. But apart from the three-point line, it's great. And I think he's going to be better under Gentry too with his ability to space the floor. But he really didn't do a ton for this Pelicans team apart from really shoot that three ball well. And so, everyone was talking about kind of reincarnation of Eric Gordon, and it's been great because he's been healthy. He's been one of the more healthier Pelicans over the last year or so, which is not what we've become accustomed to from him. But apart from the three-point shooting last season, he really didn't do a ton. But that being said, I really do think he's primed to improve under Gentry.
Yeah, and a contract year for him too, so I guess you can expect him to be in about as good a shape as he's going to get into. He opted into basically his $15 million for this year and hopes to get in on the big bonanza for next year in free agency. Yeah, I might point to someone like Ashik or maybe Ryan Anderson, who I don't think that Ryan is quite the player that he was 2-3 years ago before the back injury. And Ashik was a real good defensive center in his career up until last year. Hopefully he can get back to that. But he's someone who's a lot older than you think. He's already 29. Mm-hmm. And so that he might be another option there. So a somewhat related point, who do you think is going to get better on this team than they were last year and who might be a regression candidate?
So we mentioned Ashik in terms of regression. I don't know if he's going to regress, but I think his role is just going to kind of be reduced, especially with it's a multitude of things. It's the pace of play. They do need him even for a fast-paced team because to start a fast break, you've got to get a rebound. And so I think he does have a role in Gentry's system. I mean, Gentry had Bogut as a starting center last year, so that's case in point. And then Omer also played a similar role with the Houston Rockets. So, I think his minutes might, especially if Ryan Anderson can bounce back, and I think he is. He's healthy. He's in great shape. And I think Anderson's a prime bounce back candidate because he just did not shoot the ball as well as he normally does last year. And I think that's more fluky and injury related than anything. And I see him, the Anderson I saw on the court on Monday night at the United Center was
he was awesome in that game.
I mean, he
was shooting from two steps beyond the three-point line and making them. And that just getting that extra step to force people to close out, especially when you're being guarded by a big. I mean, the Bulls, were just could not stop them. Ultimately, they just had to change up to just switching everything in large part because of him, even when he was playing without Anthony Davis. And, you know, granted, that was preseason. He was kind of playing center. It was a weird game. But just to see him just draining those shots from, like, two steps beyond the arc was really encouraging.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think you'll see a decent amount of Anderson-Davis lineups. And even if Gentry really wants to go all offense, bringing Ajinsa out there, and another guy who can knock down, you know, 15, 18-foot jump shot. So, I mean, well, I think Omer definitely has a role in, from a defensive and rebounding perspective in an up-tempo offense. I think you may see his minutes not be where you may expect for a starting center who's supposedly so good on defense. And so I think he'll be fine, assuming he's healthy. I just maybe the minutes will drop. On the flip side, my default is Tyreek, but we've talked about him, I think, enough. I'm trying to think. Quincy's a guy I like, but we don't know when he's coming back yet. I think he'll miss about the first.
Yeah, and what type of shape he'll be. I mean, this is going to be a surgery he had in May. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to have missed 6 months. I mean, that is a major issue. We never really, I think, got a great report on precisely what it was that was wrong. You know, other than just, I think John Reed had an article in which he was quoted as saying, "We fixed a laundry list of issues." That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, and back to your kind of point about the training stuff. I mean, he was avoiding MRIs last year, and he was getting fined for it. But that's not enough. I mean, like, obviously, the Pelicans may not make the playoffs without Quincy. Obviously, it took the last day of the season for him to get the eighth seed. But, you know, at some point, you've got to say, no, you're not playing until you go in there and get your knee checked out. And you can't just let a player, you know, take the fines and keep playing through something. And so that was questionable to me too. Obviously, it's all, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But and maybe if Quincy takes a seat.
Well, I mean, look though at some of the pressures on the team, right? I mean, yep. Dell Demps has been considered to be embattled for years now, and Monty Williams, justifiably, I'm sure, felt like his job was in jeopardy if they didn't make the playoffs. Supposedly, there was like a playoffs or bust edict. You know, it turned out to be bust even for Monty, even though they did make the playoffs, and I can't say that I disagreed with that move, but yeah, I mean, you know, the guys who are in power had the incentive to maximize the short term with Pondexter. I think you're right, they don't make the playoffs without him. You know, they didn't have anybody else on the wing who was a two-way guy, so yeah, I think you know, but you look at some of the incentives in the organization and maybe it makes more sense why that happens.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right, and this team was very intent on making the playoffs last year. And you know, as much as I like, you know, what Dante brought to this team, Quincy brought something a little different, and I think that he was essential to that run the Pelicans made. Especially, you know, Quincy's not a great perimeter defender, but he's passable / good enough. And especially when you look at the other guys that the Pelicans had on the wing. So, you know, without him, that, you know, I tend to agree that they probably don't make the playoffs. They at least, you know, maybe drop one game they should have won somewhere. So, yeah, you never know. But yeah, hopefully that knee injury isn't too serious and he can get back after, you know, maybe only about a month or so.
I think AD is going to get better.
Let's hope so.
You know, I mean, especially now that he's shooting threes just so easy. It's really pretty ridiculous that he's going to add that to his game now, especially if he plays center. I mean, it's going to be completely unguardable.
Yeah, it's not just that. He looks, and this is probably attributable to his muscle gain in the offseason, but he looks more comfortable in the post. He looks more comfortable handling the ball. He went coast to coast on one possession on Monday night.
Yeah, I remember that. That was terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it looks so simple. I'm not going to say it looks Durant-esque, but I think he can get there. I mean, he was a guard in high school until he had his growth spurt. So, you know, I think he was always comfortable handling the ball, but I think now he's comfortable doing it against NBA talent, and I think that's scary. So, obviously he's going to keep getting better, and you wonder about his if he can maintain his efficiency, especially when he's going to be taking more shots under Gentry's offense. But even if the efficiency takes a slight dip, which I think is probably reasonable to assume, because I mean, his efficiency rating was his PER was 30.8 last year, and if he's taking even more shots, it's just. It's hard to see him maintaining that efficiency, but still, like, he's adding so much to his game, and he's still only, you know, 22 years old. So it's going to be fun to watch him continue to grow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Just, you know, PR is not the be all end all, but you know, AD is, and I would say that AD's blocks kind of, you know, are about right as far as like predicting what he is as a defensive player. He also, but he had a great defensive RPM as well last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody else really in NBA history is getting up into the levels where it's really only Jordan, LeBron, and Wilt have had that level of PERs, and we're talking about him doing that as a 22-year-old.
Yeah, it's almost, I don't, how do we go 30 minutes without even mentioning Anthony Davis? It's just weird to me. But
yeah, this outline sucks.
No, I mean, like, I should have at least brought him up at some point because, you know, he is the franchise. So, yeah, it's what he, what he's been able to do and just, and you know, I know it was expected from most people, I mean, myself included, but signing that extension literally the first second after free agency started and just, you know, giving the city of New Orleans something to really get behind, especially, you know, with the Saints not playing too well right now, even though they just beat the Falcons on Thursday night, which New Orleanians always love beating Atlanta. So it's just people are looking for a winner, and I think that Anthony Davis with this Pelicans team, they're positioned for a long time to at least be you know, at least get into the playoffs and be a force. So that's something that New Orleans likes a playoff team, and so that. You know, Anthony Davis is obviously a giant part of that.
I don't expect Eric Gordon to shoot 44.5% on threes this next year. Mm-hmm. That's probably a little over his head, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I would agree with that. I think he's gonna make more threes per game, obviously, with this new pace. But I don't think he'll shoot it at the same club. His catch and shoot percentage was I think it was over 50% or right around 50%, just yeah. Astronomical. And so it's hard to repeat something like that. But I think him and Luke Babbitt were and Kyle Korver were the top three in 3-point percentage in the league last year, which is kind of ridiculous that two of the three were on the Pelicans. But anyway, yeah.
All right. So what are kind of let's assume everyone finally gets healthy on this team. What are some of the potential like playing time kind of lineup issues that Coach Gentry is going to have to sort out?
So in terms of like maybe players not getting the minutes they think they want or just what?
You know, like for example, let's say Holiday, Evans, and Gordon are all healthy at the same time, you know, so and Holiday gets back to being able to play enough minutes. You know, who starts at the one? Is Tyreek going to come off the bench? Are they going to start Pondexter? Is Cunningham going to play the three or the four? You know, are they going to start AD and Ryan Anderson together, or is it Anderson going to come off the bench? Like that kind of stuff. Those are some of the big ones that I see.
Yeah, I mean, the Evans Holiday question is very interesting because, I mean, first of all, we're assuming, and I think Drew seems like he's pretty comfortable. He feels a lot better than he did the start of the year last year, and I think the Pelicans are just being cautious with him, or maybe a little too cautious, but they weren't cautious enough last year, and it bit him. So I agree with the approach that they're taking. But, you know, we talk so much about how Tyreek is primed to improve under Gentry, and, you know, what if Drew comes back to being able to play full minutes in January, February, and Tyreek's having a maybe not an all-star caliber season, but right up there. Like, what do you do? And I still think that what Drew Holiday brings on both ends, Drew is probably at full health. He's their best two-way player apart from Anthony Davis. And so what do you do? And I, you know, last season I said Drew Holiday is your point guard when he's healthy, no matter what. You either bring Tyreek off the bench or you start him. I kind of like him coming off the bench, and as long as he's playing starters minutes still. It was a situation similar to Ryan Anderson when he first joined the Hornets. Is you can bring him off the bench, but he better be playing starters minutes. And that was when the Pelicans really had nothing, or the Hornets had nothing at center. Like it was Greg Stiemsma or someone else back then, but it was horrible. I tend to think that at this point, I still think Drew Holiday is your starting point guard when he's fully healthy, just because I think his ceiling on both ends is the highest. But
and it's the defense that really needs to improve. I mean, I think as long as you have AD is proving to kind of be one of those players now, especially with just his jump shot, where I think as long as he's out there and you don't just have zero shooting around him, you're going to have a pretty good offense.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I fully agree. And the defense is obviously where the Pelicans have the most to grow, and that's why this Ehrman this Darren Ehrman hire was arguably even more important than Alvin Gentry. I tend to agree, and Drew Holiday is going to be very important for this team down the stretch, assuming he can be fully healthy. And you know, I think Quincy's your starting three if he's healthy. Obviously, he's going to miss the first month too, but for a lot of the same reasons, you know, I think he's kind of the best the Pelicans have as a small forward in terms of a two-way player. I like what Dante Cunningham brings defensively. I think he can actually play the three from a defensive perspective.
Yeah, if he just stretches out to the three-point line, a lot of my objections about playing him at the three are muted.
Right. Yeah, I tend to agree, and I've been really, really high on that train. I think, yeah, I don't think Gentry's going to stop him from taking long twos if he's wide open, because he made about 50% of them last year, and I don't know if that's sustainable. I think he's going to regress there from a long two perspective. But my biggest thing with him is if he can stretch and make and knock down that corner three, he becomes very playable at the three. And then between him and Quincy, if they're both healthy, I think you have your small forward minutes mostly covered. But again, you know, that's dependent on health.
What about playing Evans at the three? That was the lineup that traditionally has just killed it offensively, you know, with Holiday at the one and Gordon at the two, but then, has been bad defensively. Maybe they'll be better with the coaching. What do you think of that lineup?
Yeah, I mean, actually last year, I'm looking at it right now on NBA stats website, and they played, that was the fourth most used lineup. So going Drew, Gordon, Evans, AD, and Omer, they played 171 minutes, and they were plus 11 per 100 possessions. They give up 98.5 points per 100 possessions. So, I mean, it works defensively. It can, especially with better coaching. I think it definitely can work. So, I'm not too concerned about those three guards playing together. I think, as you said, offensively, they've got enough shooting with Gordon and Drew and AD. And then defensively, I think, you know, Gordon's your weak spot, obviously, but I think Drew can, you know, can guard. And you can, Drew's 6'3", so you can, in some situations, move him over and guard the two. And so I think the lineup can work on both ends, but managing minutes, I don't think it's going to be a huge issue for Gentry in terms of the backcourt.
Because nobody's going to be healthy.
That's part of it. And I think the biggest question, as you mentioned, to kind of start things off, was who starts, who comes off the bench, that sort of thing. And that, I think that's going to be heavily dependent on how the Pelicans play over the first couple months of the season.
All right, what's your crunch time lineup for this team?
The same caveat with everything as everything else, assuming health. I mean, I like Drew, Gordon, Evans, Davis, and Anderson. I like it, assuming Davis can play. And I think to close the game, Davis at the five is fine. I understand you don't want to play him big minutes at the five because you want to protect him. But I think closing.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I think he obviously is so much better offensively. I think that in some respects, his defensive talent, blocking shots, is muted if he's playing the four, though he is one of the league's best at switching out on guys in the late clock. He was really the only guy who had any success on Steph Curry doing that in the playoffs. But I think, you know, in some respects, playing way out in the perimeter is more exhausting. He has bulked up a little bit. You know, it's kind of annoying to have to bang with people, but I don't know. I mean, I think that they are best with him at center. And it might be kind of hard, but I've never seen any evidence that indicates that players actually suffer more injuries. You know, it's been anecdotal. Maybe I shouldn't discount that, but I think that they should play him at center plenty.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and yet the signings this offseason makes me question whether or not that is an actual plan. I mean, we can talk about the contracts, you know, whenever, but I think that they plan on making Anthony Davis a power forward, and I think that he will certainly play some minutes at center, and especially early on the season now with the injuries that have happened. I think you're right that the Pelicans are best with AD at the five, and even whether you have Cunningham or Anderson at the four. I mean, I think that team is just so lethal on both ends. And we'll see what Gentry and Ehrman can kind of put together, but it's interesting.
Yeah,
especially
if you're playing against like DeMarcus Cousins or something, or maybe you're playing the Clippers in certain matchups where AD really could like get abused one-on-one in the post, then maybe I feel it a little bit more. And it's just also like, you know, everyone wants to be called, to play down, even though when they're more effective playing up, just being called a center, just nobody growing up wants to be that. He like started off as a guard. I think there's a lot of just optics to that, but man, I don't know. You know, I mean, maybe if he just played that way and got hurt, you know, I might start to be convinced, but I really think it's just so much. And just like Oshik just isn't that good, I don't think, especially offensively. And he sets screens well, but, you know, kind of doing like the DHO back cut game that I know Gentry's going to want to start doing. Like, he's not a good passer. You know, he's not a guy you want handling the ball regularly out in the perimeter. So, yeah, I really think that that's why that signing was so puzzling to me, especially because, you know, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, you're going to wonder, like, how he fits in at age 33 making $10 million a year.
Yeah, and I just think the one thing that you can't discount, we talk about offense, we talk about defense, but there's, you know, there's the little thing that turns defense into offense, which is getting a rebound. And, you know, I think that Anderson has throughout his career been a slight plus on the offensive glass, but he's never been great on the defensive glass. And I just worry about, you know, from a rebounding perspective with AD at the five, I mean, how do you have to have your guards hang back and kind of help and fight for rebounds, and that hurts your transition game. So, then that's where I think, you know, Ashik really provides value is on the glass. And I mean, obviously defensively, but on the glass too, and helping start that fast break. So he definitely has a place. And you know, another thing with, you know, his long-term contract, I feel like I first of all, I didn't like it. I thought that 3 years was right. I thought it's not a 5-year contract. It's a 4-year contract. And there's,
right,
there's I think $3 million guaranteed in the last season. And there's like about $1 million of incentives in each season. And they're right now they're considered unlikely because I haven't looked to see what they are. They didn't come out after about a month after the contract was inked. I still hadn't seen what the incentives are, but he didn't do it last year. So, that contract could end up being, pretty far south of what the full value of it is right now. So, I don't hate it, but I still don't like it. I mean, 4 years still seems like 1 year too long in my opinion.
Yeah, that's, I agree with you on that. So it's really going to be interesting. So your closing lineup is AD Anderson, Holiday, Gordon, Evans. That's probably what you're looking at. Maybe Cunningham in certain matchups.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you can get stops defensively with that lineup, I think that's your best one. And I think the fact that on offense you can pretty much ignore Ashik kind of takes him out of the closing game. Obviously, in certain situations, if you really need him there for defense, I think you play him. But for most situations, I think it's. It's Drew, Gordon, Tyreek, AD, and Anderson.
Do you think they would ever just play Evans at the two and not play Gordon?
It's definitely possible. Drew and Tyreek, throughout their 2 years together, and the minutes they've both been healthy together, have actually killed it. And they play very well together, which may be counterintuitive in a sense because they both like to handle the ball. But the numbers with those two are very very positive. So I think it could definitely be the case, especially if Gordon is kind of not shooting well for a period of time. Because I mean, like I mentioned, he really wasn't great at a ton else besides the shooting last year. So it's possible you go with a lineup like Drew and Tyreek and maybe Quincy or Dante at the three, and then you go Anderson and Davis. So yeah, it's certainly a situation I can foresee. But if Gordon's having an off night from beyond the arc or something,
yeah, I think Drew is versatile, unlike a lot of point guards, in that he is a nice spot up shooter. He can play off the ball as well once he actually gets back to playing his full minutes. So yeah, I think you can kind of mix and match, especially if the other team has a really good wing. Maybe you go Pondexter and you take out either Gordon or Evans, depending on. I happen to agree with you that Holiday still should be playing at the one, unless, you know, maybe we'll see that he's less effective this year just due to coming off the injuries and maybe not being able to train as hard as he wanted to in the offseason or something like that. And then up front, I think Anderson and Davis is just so hard to stop. Maybe if Cunningham really starts to be a legitimate threat from three, that you might go with him in some situations instead to get a little more defense on the floor, especially because then you can start doing some more switching, which I'm sure they're going to want to do as well. So that's what I'd look at. I definitely agree with you. I mean, there's also the fouling issue with Ashik as well, which I think is overstated, but still something that can be a concern.
It's overstated for him, but I think it's understated for Ajinsa, and because he has a lot that he brings to the table. And I think that contract that he got was about like 4 years, $20 million. I think it was fair. I didn't expect the Pelicans to be the team to give it to him, just because of, you know, especially I think we all are hoping that AD would play the five more minutes than he did the prior season, even if it wasn't a predominant position for him. But so I was kind of surprised that Ajinsa got that contract from the Pelicans. But he brings a lot, and he actually did get his foul rate down last season, but it's still a problem for him. And so I mean I think he's as long as he can keep driving that foul rate down, he's well worth the money that he was paid.
Yeah, another thing they might even consider too is play Pondexter at the four. And that would be a pretty nasty lineup as well, maybe, although, you know, Pondexter maybe isn't quite as big as you might think that he is from like a strength standpoint, but in certain matchups, that might be something that they could consider also. So what do you see as the main strengths of this team over the course of the year?
Their age and their athleticism. I think that the fact that most of these guys are in the prime of their careers really, really jives well with what Gentry wants to do. And I mean, I'm not saying that this team is stocked full of supreme athletes, but they've got guys who are in the primes of their careers and from a conditioning perspective can get to where Gentry wants them to be, again, you know, assuming that they can stay on the court from a health perspective. But, you know, I really think that the pieces on this roster work very well with the kind of game that Gentry wants to play. So, I mean, apart from picking out maybe individual players and their strengths and weaknesses, I think from a team perspective, that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Yeah, I think their pick and roll play and also offensive rebounding is something that even when it's Davis and Anderson, both those guys are really good offensive rebounders. You have a lot of guys who can penetrate and get to the basket, especially Evans, and you know will draw help, miss the shot, and then guys like Anderson and AD can clean that up. So I think that's a big thing. And just generally, when you've got AD who is one of the best pop guys and one of the best role guys, and then you have Anderson as well being able to play pick and pop as well, I think that's pretty awesome. And then, you know, shot blocking too with Ashik and Ajinsa and AD, all those guys, pretty good shot blockers, pretty good rim protectors. They just have to actually be put in position. But once they're actually there, they're pretty solid. Although I will say this about AD, he is actually not quite as good at protecting the rim in a traditional sense as you might expect. I think there are a lot of times where he kind of would be in position and just not really jump, and he doesn't really do the whole verticality thing quite as well. A lot of his shot blocks will come on the perimeter, which, although they're very useful, are also just less valuable blocks than if you're blocking a layup because the initial shot's less likely to go in to begin with. Have you noticed that from him, or do you think I'm selling him short?
Yeah, no, it's actually something I've been trying to figure out with him, whether that's something that you just that's more – you either have it or you don't, or if it's something, because we tend to forget that this guy's only 22 years old and it's something that I think it can be taught. And so I wouldn't count out his ability to improve in that area. He had not been as good as many people might think protecting the rim. I think his block numbers kind of artificially inflate people's perspective of him on the defensive end, because he's above average for sure, but he's not the elite defender that a lot of people give him credit to be yet, but I think he can get there.
Yeah, well, his defensive RPM did kind of come into line last year with what the perception of him was, and I think while he might be overrated as just a pure basket protector, he's probably underrated in terms of his mobility, his ability to switch, get on and shooters. I mean, he single-handedly, I thought the Pels really, for most of that Warriors series, actually played pretty good defense. And I was impressed, given where they had been in the regular season, that they were able to do that. But a lot of that was just his ability to completely exhaust himself. He was always exhausted by the end of those games. But to get out in the perimeter, really flummox Curry and prevent that initial opening getting to the basket. So his ability to do that is something that is pretty much, nobody else really has that in the league. Maybe Willie Cauley-Stein could be that type of a guy someday with both the ability to challenge shots and the mobility.
Yeah.
But that's about it, I think.
Yeah, and then one thing I will point out with Anderson, too, you mentioned the offensive rebounding and how, you know, I do agree he's above average offensive rebounder, but he wasn't there last year. And I think one thing I noticed from him in particular, apart from the three-point shooting in the game in Chicago on Monday night, was he's more willing. I think this is attributed to him being healthy, as he was not over the last year and a half. But he'll body down low again. And I feel like last year he would get in the post and just kind of shoot those fadeaways. He can make
more than right shoulder fadeaway every time.
And he makes them more than most people. But you know, seeing him hitting, following his shots and getting second, even third chances at the rim just adds so much, not just to his game, but the team overall.
Yeah, and that's one of the very key things about it, right, is they don't really have that many guys on the wing that can come in and play four. But if you go with him at the four, and I think the Warriors generally did this, other than that game three, were very successful at it, is you just say, all right, you're going to play Ryan Anderson. We're going to play a wing instead. And that guy, in terms of making Anderson himself guard the three-point line, and then the ability to go by him on the perimeter, that's going to counterbalance and probably exceed whatever Anderson can do from a shooting standpoint, and then, you know, kind of using his size in the post or offensive rebounding. And I think the Pelicans lost that battle a lot of times last year against teams that had good wings they could force Anderson to match up with. And it sounds like your hope is that this year he'll be able to kind of tilt that balance more in his favor.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the back injury that we talked about was big in that. I don't think Anderson ever got fully healthy last year. You know, I think the
He looked a little bit heavier as well than he had in past years, and it sounds like you're saying he looks better now this year.
Yeah, I mean, and his 3-point shooting home versus road was just night and day, and so I think that's largely fluky. And so I think that we're gonna see a revitalized Anderson who has cut weight and who looks healthy and someone who's really not afraid to kind of help out on the offensive glass or the glass on both ends, which the Pelicans will need, especially early without both of their, you know, centers who's supposed to get big minutes.
Yeah. So what do you see as the weaknesses on this team? What are you attacking if you're an opposing coach? I mean, we talked about Anderson going at the four, maybe trying to go small against them. Like, what are some other things that opposing coaches might try and exploit?
It's still a perimeter defense. It's especially with Drew still out. You can design whatever kind of defensive scheme you want, but if your guards can't stop penetration, then you're going to have problems. And so that's when I'm excited for Darren Erman. I'm excited for what he can do with guys like Evans, who have the wingspan, who have the ability to defend well, in theory, just putting that into practice. But until these guys prove that they can stop the dribble drive, it's going to be hard to play solid defense. I mean, you've heard these guys, some of these Pelicans players thinking that this can be a top defense in the league, but to do that, you've got to be able to stop guys from getting to the rim and getting the big man kind of out of position. So that's still the biggest weakness for me going forward. And until I see that it can be corrected through a defensive scheme, I'm not counting on it. I think it's more personnel. Until I actually see it happen, I'm not buying in on the Pelicans being a top half or a top 10 defensive team.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see with how coaching and all that stuff comes together to take a team that obviously has some real good talents defensively, but also some holes. I think another weakness is general health, but also backup point guard, I think, is a concern for this team, especially with Holiday not being able to play the minutes, Cole being out now. They just signed Bo McCaleb and Nate Robinson. So McCaleb is a guy who maybe Americans don't know, but it was one of the best European point guards for a while. Had maybe the greatest performance ever in the history of the European Championships when he took a Macedonia team into the EuroBasket Final Four. But he's now, you know, into his 30s and kind of past his prime, which is too bad. Sorry, I'd wanted to just do a soliloquy on him because I always liked him. But I think those are the weaknesses. Pivoting now a little bit, what are kind of the key questions that you are monitoring for this team that are going to kind of be bellwethers for whether they're going to be good or not, or as good as we want them to be this year?
I mean, health is obviously the number one. I wasn't nearly as concerned about that a month ago as I am now. But kind of whether they can weather the storm and kind of stay afloat while these guys are out, I think the first month of the season is going to be critical. I mean, they have, look in the first 10 to 15 games of the season, they've got some tough matches. They played the Golden State twice. They played the Hawks twice. They've got the Thunder in mid-November. And so they've got some easier games too, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, no matter who you're playing, if you're shorthanded, your odds of winning go down. Even if it's a bad team, like it's going to make it a tougher game. So, whether this team can really, sustain the injuries. And I think as long as Anthony Davis is healthy, it's enough to beat bad teams, but it's going to be an uphill battle up until a few uh, a few of these guys can come back. I mean, hopefully Omer's not out for too long, because Agence is out for, another month or so. So that's the key to me, is being able to hang around and play, 500 or better than, a little better than 500 basketball until the new year. And if they can do that and kind of be fully healthy around New Year's with Jrue Holiday coming back, this team is going to, I think, put together one heck of a second half of the season. So that's the most pressing issue for me, is seeing if this team from a health perspective can really get it together by the new year and not have fallen too far behind in the playoff race.
Yeah. To me, I'm going to be watching the defense a ton. I mean, there's still, despite some of the holes that they have, being 22nd in defense was totally unacceptable for this team last year with the talent they have. I think that's something that can improve. It's just the question of whether it's going to improve to 15th or whether it's going to improve to a top 10 level. I mean, I think it's, even if they're totally healthy, this team could be good enough to be like a top 5 defensive team, even. Like, I mean, with just what AD can do, what Ashik has been able to do in the past, what Holiday has been able to do in the past. They haven't put it all together on this team, but maybe that's something that could happen. I don't think it's likely, but I think it's within the realm of possibility. And whether Ashik can kind of have a bunch back here, and then just what AD might be capable of again in this offense, shooting threes, looking at his game also just from an isolation perspective as well, especially during late games where he wasn't maybe as effective as you would have liked to have seen. Draymond Green, you shut him down late game in that Warriors series, but just that's, it's not even necessarily a bellwether, because he's going to be really good regardless, but just that's what I just can't wait to watch, is to see when you consider what he was doing at age 22, that it's possible that he could be a top 3 player of all time, and I hope to see him make further strides on that road this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point on the defense, I mean, so removing Quincy Pondexter from the equation, since he's going to be out for the first year, even with the injuries the way they are now, you could run a lineup out there of Holiday, Evans, Cunningham, Davis, and Omer, assuming he can come back after the first two or three games. I mean, that in theory should be a pretty good defense. And I know Evans kind of hasn't been where you think he could be from an athleticism standpoint, but assuming, that the new coaching, the new scheme under Darren Erman, like that's a lineup that should cause a lot of problems on the defensive end. And so, I agree, that's something that's big to watch, because the offense has been good. As long as Anthony Davis is on the floor, that offense is, top 10. So the defense is really the area to watch this year.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting, right? How much do they want to just rely on AD to carry the offense and just try to get better defensively? I think that lineup that you talked about, unless AD is really starting to shoot threes at a crazy rate, that unit would struggle for spacing quite a bit. And maybe if Cunningham can get there too, you would start to think that. So, all right, enough horsing around here. What is your predicted record for the Pelicans this year?
Again, this record was a little different before all the wheels fell off the bus from an injury perspective.
But. Yeah. So we'll give you a official prediction, and then best case and worst case.
Okay. Yeah. I really think that AD is good enough, and with the coaching they had, the coaching change, I think this team can push 50. They had 45 last year, and I think they're over under right now. I think 47.5, maybe. I think that's what it was.
That's what it was as of like a month ago when we did the podcast.
Yeah. I think upper 40s right now is realistic for them. As long as Davis can stay healthy, I think. I can't see them being worse than they were last season with the 45 wins. I think realistic now with a little of injury problems, I think upper 40s, maybe 50, is where I would pin them. And probably, I was saying at full health, the 6 or 7 seed, I think it's more likely to be 7 now with Jrue Holiday's minutes restriction, because we didn't know about that until a month or so ago. I thought they can push Memphis, and honestly, with a transcendent talent like Davis, you never know if a team's going to make a huge jump. And I wouldn't rule that out with the Pelicans, but it's obviously not likely, especially given how strong the Western Conference is. So I put them around 6 or 7 seed, more likely 7 seed, and around 40, between 48 and 50 wins.
Yeah. So I guess that makes you over then, if we are doing the 47.5, which you can continue the tradition of every team guest going over. I think they are going to be under, and I would, if they were totally healthy, I think this team could win 55 games very easily. But the Pondexter thing is not good. at all. You know, he doesn't even have a timetable for being back yet. We don't know what the surgery was. He shot horribly the year before to the point that he basically was dumped. His $3 million salary was dumped, and then he became a two-way guy on the wing who was good last year. But, you know, when he's struggled with health problems, he has not been able to shoot the ball well. He has not been good. I don't know how good he's going to be even when he does get back. The Holiday thing is a huge concern. Cole being out, they really have nothing at backup point guard. I mean, you're talking about right now, let's see, who are some of the guys who are going to be in their rotation? We're talking about they might have either McCaleb or Robinson, whichever one of those guys sticks in the rotation to start the year. Luke Babbitt could be in the rotation. Chris Douglas, Roberts, Alonzo G, and Babbitt, you know, he's injured now too. Kendrick Perkins could be in the rotation. Dante Cunningham, you know, we've been talking about him as an okay player, but I still don't think of him as a starting quality player by any means, especially when he's playing the three. Maybe if he learns to shoot better from three and takes more from three, that's less of a concern, but I'll believe that when I see it. So those are, and then Ashik could be out too. It's really, and then when you consider just the overall health record of this team, Eric Gordon, another guy, I just do not expect them to be healthy. And I feel really sad saying that because they did win 45 years a year ago, even with significant injuries. You think that with the coaching coming in, with everyone getting a year more of experience, that if they can really improve the defense and the guys who are pretty young could take a step forward, that this could be a team that could win in the low 50s, even 55 games. But I just don't trust the health. That's why I'm going under. I'm going to pick them for 46 wins.
Okay. I mean, I think that's fair. And kind of along the lines of what I said, like, if as long as AD is healthy, I think I can't see them being worse than they were last year.
Yeah. He also, you know, he misses 15 games a year, it seems right. like, with, yeah. and you know, nothing serious, but yeah. but things.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think the fact that he can never he hasn't been able to stay completely healthy, like, to your point. And so I think that's kind of where the, you know, the over under is kind of tricky. So, obviously I'm on the optimism side with Davis. And that's why I'm picking over, but I'm, you know, not picking drastically over. I think 48, 49 is where I see them right now. So I wouldn't bet it if that's what you're asking. So I think the over-under right now is fair, and I don't think I would touch it.
Yeah. What's your absolute best-case scenario for this team? I mean, you know, granted, we know, assuming that the injuries that happen right now, you know, that's obviously already happened, but if everyone can get healthy on the accepted timetable, what's your absolute best-case scenario for this team?
I think they can push for a four seed. Obviously with how they're just five really good teams. And I think with the Ty Lawson addition with Houston is assuming he can stay out of trouble. I think that puts them up on that threshold with those other teams with Golden State, Spurs, Thunder, and the Clippers. It's so tough to crack those teams because they're all so good. But, you know, Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. And if you can get Jrue Holiday back to full minutes in January, this team can really, really make a serious run. And I think even if they can't get a first round home playoff series, they would be a nightmare matchup for one of these teams that goes to show how tough the Western Conference is. And I think they could maybe push for a first round upset and even get one if they're really clicking on all cylinders with a fully healthy team, over the next season.
Yeah, I could see them. Maybe, like I said, winning 55 games and, you know, they kind of keep the offense about the same level at that, maybe even make some improvements, get up to like seventh or sixth. And then I think it's not totally out of the realm of possibility that this could be a top 10 defense, maybe even, you know, sniffing the top five. And if you get up to those levels on both ends, that's a 55 win team. It might even be slightly better than that. And then, you know, I think at least one of those top five teams in the West is going to have injuries and may drop down a little bit. So, and Memphis could have a drop off as well. So I could see them even getting to the four seed at best and, you know, winning a first round playoff series against the five seed. I don't see them getting beyond the second round, but that would be real progress. My question though, for this team, even if they get to their best case scenario, how can they improve in future years? I mean, they're going to have about $20 million in cap space, but they're going to have Anderson and Gordon as free agents this year. So, you know, you don't think of them as like a Kevin Durant destination. I thought that would be so unbelievable if that happened. But, you know, I don't see where they have the flexibility to take the next step because they do have this AD contract coming in starting at $25 million a year. They don't have anybody who's super young in the pipeline as far as draft picks, so they traded all of them away. How can this team get up to really being a championship contender in the next 3 or 4 years? I don't see an obvious path to that.
Yeah, and that's a fair question, but I mean, I think this current cap environment is just a free for all, and you're much more cap savvy than I am, but I think all bets are off once these subsequent jumps happen over the next two seasons. And I know we don't know for sure, like with the lockout questions, what the cap is going to be, moving forward from that. But there's going to be a lot of money to be thrown around, and I feel uncomfortable projecting anything. And so this team can get max cap space for next offseason. They don't have it right now, but it'd be as easy as unloading a guy if you really think that you had a shot at Durant, and you could trade Tyreek very easily, and he's going to be an expiring deal being paid like $10 million, which is a huge bargain with the cap jump coming. And so, I mean, I've been putting the Durant likelihood around 5-10% max, and maybe that's even I think a lot of people would say that's high. But I think the opportunity to spend the rest of your prime with a guy like Anthony Davis has to at least count for something, especially if they can show how much fun it is to play in Gentry system, and they can take a real leap. Honestly, it's going to come down to, I think, not next off season, assuming Durant doesn't come, which is the likely scenario, two seasons from now, when, there's just a ton of money to be thrown around, and there's some free agent talent there. But
a lot of it depends too on whether they re-sign Gordon and Anderson or not, because if they don't, and they don't get the star, then they're basically going to have 20 or 25 million to come up with, a third big and a starting shooting guard. That's probably not going to be enough money to do that. And so, I mean, it's even possible if they lost those guys, they might be in a situation where they say, hey, we won 50 games this year. Nobody else is going to come here. We can't replace these guys for the amount that they're going to make. We have the bird rights on these guys, Anderson and Gordon. So we might as well just bring these guys back, because there's no way we can replace him with the amount of space we would have if they left. And then, you're locked in again for those future years when you're paying those guys market rate. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens for them in the offseason. I think a lot of that will be determined by, do they win 45 games or do they win 55 games?
Yeah, and you're right. And I think it's a weird situation with Eric Gordon, because I don't see him being a Pelican past this contract, just because I have no idea what kind of money he's gonna get in the open market the next offseason. Just because what I mentioned before, like maybe some teams' eyes light up when they see his 3-point percentage, but he doesn't bring a ton, especially for the Pelicans, who have, when healthy, Tyreek and Drew handling the ball. Gordon is not a bad secondary ball handler. He's pretty solid, but it's not a need for the Pelicans. I mean, so I don't know. I find it tough to see if Eric Gordon's sticking around unless he's going to – I mean, obviously, depending on what kind of contract he's going to get. But, yeah, Anderson's a better question. And I think assuming he can have a bounce-back year from a health perspective and really make threes at the rate you'd hope that he can make it, like, historically – there's also the question of the fact that they just signed two bigs for the next few years with Omer and with Alexis. So, there's a minutes distribution question there, assuming all these guys are healthy. And so, I like what Anderson brings. I mean, you wonder if either of those guys are people who the Pelicans may look to see what they can get for them at the trade deadline if they don't think they're going to bring him back for next season, particularly Eric Gordon. So, we'll see.
What do you think is the absolute worst case scenario for this team?
I
usually say this, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I usually say this in the sense of, barring catastrophic injuries, but I think with this team where you have a bunch of guys who kind of are already injured and have had these nagging things that could last into this year, I think you have to kind of price the injuries in a little bit more in that worst case scenario than you might for other teams.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think worst case. Let's not include an AD injury, because AD's been.
Yeah, we'll assume he plays 65 games.
And I think
that's fair.
I think missing the playoffs is still within the realm of possibility. I don't think it's likely by any stretch. I think this team is, even with the injuries right now, I think they're one of the best 8 teams in the West.
I don't think they missed the playoffs.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and so I
if only because it's not going to be as much competition for the eighth seed, I don't think, in this year.
It's more top heavy. Looking at what happened to Portland and Dallas, and a lot of those guys going to the teams that are already good, like Aldridge, for example. But
right.
But yeah, I mean, I think right around where they finished last season. You know, assuming Davis stays healthy, but everything else continues to go wrong. Drew can't get right, and you know, I think 44, 45 wins is not impossible if the injuries are that bad, and if you know that, because you know, in Gentry's system doesn't really pick up with these guys the way that we had hoped they would. But you know, I think the overwhelming likelihood is this team makes the playoffs, and you know, whether or not they can kind of push in the first round and get to the second round will depend on how healthy this team can get.
Yeah, I could see them as low as 41, 42 wins, just because if some of these guys with the nagging injuries, I think Pondexter being a guy who they counted on a lot more last year than you know, might be realized. I mean, if they're playing some of those names that I mentioned, big rotation minutes.
What's wrong with Sean Kilpatrick? Come on.
You know, if those guys have to be in the rotation and spot 6 through 9 and 10 in the rotation look like they look at the start of the season, if that lasts all year, then I do think they could end up around 500, just because, again, you've got so much time where you've just got these guys who are kind of sinkholes, and they'll look more like they did through the first half of last year before they got Pondexter, which was really about 500. I think they might have even been like slightly under 500 when they got him, right?
I can't remember exactly, but I mean, yeah, I mean, looking at, we talked about the bench, but as good as Jimmer, Rivers, and John Salmons are, I mean, I know it's shocking, but they may have been under 500. Yeah, I mean, it's not, I guess, if you're talking absolute worst case scenario, yeah, maybe. But I just think it, as long as AD keeps it progressing, that him healthy by itself is enough to be, you know, 500, maybe a skosh over. But I totally understand the perspective.
Yeah, I'm only saying that the fact that I could predict that they might be 500 with him playing a lot. I mean, he is absolutely a top five player. I am not discounting that at all. That is just an indication of like how bad I think things could possibly be. Yeah. If it doesn't go right for guys like Drew, Tyreek, Ryan Anderson, Pondexter. I mean, those are four guys who are all like potential injury risks. And then Oshik as well, another guy, Ajinsa, like there's so many, Norris Cole. I mean, there's so many guys who, if things go wrong for them, they could really be in big trouble. So, like half their roster has like the little S next to them on Roto-World now. So, yeah. All right, so let me get you out of here. What's the best way to keep up with your work?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, I mean, I'm just my own name, Mason Ginsberg, on Twitter, and then you can follow. I write for the ESPN True Hoop Network affiliate for the Pelicans, Bourbon Street Shots, and we're just ramping up now. It's been we were pretty dormant this offseason. I think everyone's just taking a step back and relaxing. You know, once the free agency period played out, it was, we took our foot off the gas for a little while, but things are starting to pick up again. We have the site's got a great podcast with Michael McNamara and Ryan Schwan. So I highly recommend that as well. But yeah, Bourbon Street Shots, check us out. And, this has been fun. So Nate, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA. Facebook page is a great way to keep up with the podcast. Some of my little musings as well that I'll be posting, you know, just like 250 words. If I watch some games that night, I'll sometimes post stuff on Facebook. Obviously, my writing at the Cauldron, and I swear I will write something else for Nylon Calculus at some point. And then also, if you want to support the podcast, whether it's an iTunes rating or ranking, sharing on social media, letting your friends know, those are great ways to do it. And then our sponsors using the CapSpace code, all one word, is a great way to support the podcast as well. And we'll be going, hopefully 5 days a week throughout the entire season. So thanks again to Mason for coming on. We will talk to you all next time.